Welcome to Well-Rounded Corners. I'm Ruth Ann.
And I'm Robert.
And we'll be your hosts for the next hour. In this show, we will be interviewing Dr. Angela Thompson-Smith, an expert in remote viewing. But before we get to the interview, I'd like to take a moment to remind you of various ways you can listen to our show. Shows are available within 24 hours after we air on BBS Radio on iTunes by searching Well-Rounded Corners or on our website, wellroundedcorners.com. You can also catch us in the BBS Radio Archives, or live every other Tuesday at 9 p.m. Central, 7 p.m. Pacific, right here on BBS Radio.
Absolutely. And as Ruth Ann said, we have a special guest with us this hour. We'd like to welcome to the show Dr. Angela Thompson-Smith, renowned remote viewer, life coach, psychologist, consultant, and speaker. She has worked for over 20 years with individuals, groups, and companies on projects ranging from personal issues, humanitarian work, business management. She's also a trainer on remote viewing, and she shares her skills in this scientifically proven field with others. Angela, it is a great honor to have you on the show. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, just for getting started, getting our listeners started on remote viewing, if you wouldn't mind just giving an overview, describing what remote viewing is, and kind of, you know, kind of give an overview for our listeners on that.
Right. The definition's changed over the years. Originally, it was a research protocol at Stanford Research Institute where people were trying to perceive events and people at a distance, and then it became more of a public. The public owned it after a while, and it's become a varied definition. Some people think that remote viewing is just closing your eyes and trying to perceive something at a distance, which it is. Other people think it's a little bit more complex than that, which is doing it within a certain protocol, like controlled remote viewing, which the military taught and developed. Or it can be really very complex, such as a research protocol. And all of those are correct. But basically, it's an ability to perceive events and people and objects at a distance, regardless of time. So remote viewing can be of something in the past, the present, or the future, but without any cueing.
Oh, I see. That's very interesting. And we'll touch on the time aspect later. We have a question actually for that.
It seems like it's broadened and changed since I first, learned about what that is back years ago. I think that's really interesting that the field has expanded and the definition has too. Sounds like there'd be a lot of uses. I mean, more than used to when I first learned what the words meant, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's nice to see.
Yeah, it seems like it has definitely grown. Can anyone remote view? I mean, is this something that everyone has the ability to do?
Well, it's like math or musical ability. Everybody has a little bit of ability, and some people have a lot of ability. So it depends on their level of ability, the training, how well you practice. That depends on how good a viewer you will become, but most people can remote view.
Well, could you tell? I mean, you talked a little bit about the broader definition now that it has. Could you give us kind of a history of how it's been used? I mean, from when it was. I know it's been around a while as far as the concept of it, and I've heard various little things just over my life of how it's been used, and I'd like to kind of if you could tell us a little bit of kind of the history of it.
Right. It was developed actually in the very, very beginning by Ingo Swann at the American Society for Psychical Research in New York in a very informal way. He was doing some research on out-of-body experience at the ASPR and decided that he wanted to broaden the scope of what they were asking him. They were saying, okay, you know, here's a picture in an envelope, here's an object that's hidden, what is it? And he said, well, let me tell you what the weather's like in Chicago.
Wow. Now that's impressive.
Yeah, and then you can call up Chicago and find out what the weather's like and see if I'm correct or not. And of course he was. So they did a whole series of what's the weather like, you know. Then he would say, well, let me tell you what people in the street and, you know, outside this office are doing. There were a couple of stories up.
Wow.
And he'd say, at the moment, there's a woman walking by with an orange raincoat on. So
wow.
They'd look out the window, and there'd be the woman with the orange raincoat. And then Gaston would be sitting there smoking his cheroots and, you know, giving them the information. So then he heard about some work that was being done at Stanford Research Institute in Palo Alto, California. And they were doing some psychic research, Hal Potthoff and his team, actually doing research for the CIA at SRI. And he wrote about, some of the methodologies they were using and some of the theories. And they invited him out. And it was around that time they were also interviewing Uri Geller and a few other folks. Yeah. And so they put in, go through his paces, and they said, hey, interesting person here. Could you come out and do some research with us? So Ingo went out, spent some couple of years with them, and they developed a couple of protocols. And, of course, it was all done very scientifically. Ingo had no upfront information. They'd say, here's a coordinate, geographic coordinate, latitude, longitude. Tell us what's at this location.
Mm-hmm.
So he would draw a very complex island, and it would turn out to be this tiny little speck of an island in the middle of the Pacific.
Oh.
Very correct.
Wow.
And then, so that was called scanning, Project Scan 8, scanning by coordinate. Then somebody came along and said, well, if you gave me those coordinates, I could tell you what was there without using remote viewing. So then they brought in an encrypted program where they would put the coordinates, latitude and longitude, into the computer, and it popped out this jumbled up random letters and numbers, you know, a series, an address, target. And the viewers still gave accurate information. They were still on target.
Wow.
Even with this encrypted coordinate.
Well, does that mean that there's some link in the whatever you want to call it, you know, the cosmos or the ether or whatever you want to call it? Like, does that mean it links the random number that the computer generated somewhere to the geographical coordinates? I mean, is that, I guess, that would be the way it would have to work, right?
Yeah, supposedly Ingo Swann has written that there is a vast matrix of information,
mm-hmm.
something like the Akashic Records, Akashic Library, that has all the information past, present, and future, and something called the signal line that comes to and from that matrix, and that's something the viewer can latch onto and get the information.
Right.
My theory is that I think the viewer goes out of body and goes to the site, goes to the location, gets the information.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. What I mean, it seems to me that you have to be there. I mean, on some level, whether it's energetically, you have to. I mean, there's some connection there that's not just reading something, as far as I'm seeing it, and I may be wrong on that. But what do you think about that? Do you think it's you actually go?
I think so, because I've had out of body experiences all my life,
mm-hmm.
and when I remote view a location, I feel that I'm there, and it feels the same as being out of body. So
yes.
From that, the purists, the remote viewing purists, say no, it's nothing out of body. It's you go to the signal line, you go to the matrix, and you get the information, and you know it goes into the subconscious and then up to the consciousness. And but
when you're working on an energetic level, though, it's really hard to differentiate. You know what that. I mean, it's hard to tell, though, I guess. I mean, you're the purist that would say that you're going to some record or something and getting it. I mean, that's, you know, when you're dealing with energy, it could all be one and the same, you know.
It could, could be. These are all theories.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that, you know, my experience with this is tiny, tiny compared to yours. When I've tried it, I'm usually really accurate, but it always feels as if I'm seeing it. I mean, it doesn't feel like I'm getting information. It feels like I'm seeing something. I guess is why I was asking you. It feels as if it's in front of me, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, it uses all the senses. Some people, it depends on your method of processing information. If you're a very visual person, I am, I get lots of visuals. But some people are clairsentient, and they get the sounds. They get songs coming in and words. Some people are just that clairaudient. Clairsentient is they just get feelings about the target.
Yes.
So, but when you do, there's another method that was brought in after the coordinate method, which was called controlled remote viewing, when the military took over and decided they wanted something they could teach the soldiers. And they developed a protocol that uses all the senses. So it's a very sequential protocol where you have, you can get colors and shapes and forms and sounds and smells and tastes.
Now, did they find that to be much more accurate using all the senses and with his particular protocol? Or
Inga Swann trained his viewers up to 80%. That was his aim.
Oh.
So of 80% accuracy or
80% accuracy.
Wow. Well, that's pretty accurate.
Yeah.
That's better than, you know, if you send someone to a room and say, okay, look at what's going on in the room, and then you take that room, you know, you pull them out of the room, they may not even get 80% of it right, even if they were physically there. So 80% in that that's way is pretty impressive, I'd say.
I guess you're consciously looking and noticing and smelling and tasting and hearing and whatever you're doing. I mean, it's a conscious effort as opposed to looking in a room and, you know, although I guess that would be a conscious effort too.
Yeah, but unless you have a photographic memory and then.
Right. Well,
yeah.
Yeah. Now that would be pretty impressive to do remote viewing with a photographic memory, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
But you'd only get the visual aspect of it. I mean, I guess, like, you know, you wouldn't get as much the auditory aspect or the.
Unless you were prompted for those, for, you know, what did the room smell like? What did the room, what was the ambience of the room? Was there a lot of tension in the room? Or, you know, which are the kinds of things you prompt for in remote viewing?
Now somebody can, you mentioned like tension in a room, you know, I think everybody's had the experience where you walk into a room, you know, people maybe are, and you can tell that people have been arguing or that there's, you know, some kind of issue. Would you think, and I know this is theory, but I mean, would you think that detecting that kind of lingering emotion or energy would be similar to the energy that someone would pick up in a remote viewing session? I mean, we're talking about the same sort of thing?
Yeah, it's called ambience in remote viewing. And it's definitely the same thing.
Well, that's everywhere. I mean, that would make sense. And and when the little that I've done, there's a lot of that to me. It's like the energy coming off whatever I'm seeing. And so I guess it's just, as you said, that's how I perceive things. So I guess for me, that would be different than someone who is basically very visual but doesn't really get a lot of energy from that. He or she would get it but not notice it or process it or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, could you just describe a narrative of a typical remote viewing session? Like, I mean, that is one that is not where you're just doing it, but where someone, you know, a quote unquote official one where it's being written down or recorded or something. Could you kind of describe how that would work?
Okay. Well, I can tell you about one that I did a while back, a couple of years ago, where a colleague told me that he had a project for me, and he said he didn't want to give me any upfront information, because what we do with remote viewing is try and do these what's called blind as much as possible. So there's nothing that's going to excite the imagination. Sometimes you need to have a little bit of front loading, which is this is an event or this is a location. But this one was totally blind. He just gave me the coordinate, which was the random series of letters and numbers. And I got lots of perceptions, and I did the controlled remote viewing, which is the paper and pen, very sequential, protocol. I got that there was water, it was brackish, it was off an island, there was lots of seaweed, there were lots of, you know, and I got lots of things related to water and off a coastal area, off an island, off an estuary. So I sent him that information. And he replied saying, okay, well, I'm going to give you a little bit of front loading here, which is what we call information up front. He said, this is a colleague of mine that went missing over a month ago now. We haven't heard from him. Can you now give us some more information about what you're perceiving? So what I did then, I went in and did another type of remote viewing called extended remote viewing, which is an altered state, because now, you know, I was a little bit front-loaded now with information. So I did a sort of an OBE, altered state.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to the site and got a lot more information. Went aerially, looked around, went under the water, just gave him a whole bunch more information. And so he took that information with him when he went out to California.
Oh.
And he and his wife were sitting in the motel one evening when there was a news broadcast about a body that had been fished out of the water off of Catalina Island. And Robert said, hey, that's what Angela told us.
Oh, you know, wow.
That looks like the location, Angela. I bet that's our buddy.
Wow.
So he called the coroner's office, and after a bit of back and forth, they said, okay, well, can you tell us the next of kin? And it turned out to be his friend who'd been murdered and dumped in the water.
Wow.
So then they wanted to know more information about the boat, because there was a boat that this colleague and another friend were renovating, and they were going to be taking it on a trip. So I did another ERV, which was the altered state, and saw a shape of land that looked like the tip of England, just Devon, the very, very foot of England. That's all I could see, and I drew that shape, sent it off to my colleague, and he came back. He sent me back a map of Tortola Island. He said, is this what you're looking at?
Wow.
And it was the same shape. I said, yeah. He said, okay, tell us where the boat is. So I, a little dowsing, map dowsing around, and found the location, sent that off. And it seems that the boat had been taken down there and then taken back to Catalina, because they had some offshore banking down there.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
The kind of information you can get from remote viewing.
Well, now, you mentioned different types, and you mentioned altered states, and so I assume that sometimes you would be in, I don't know, in a way, to me, if you're really concentrating and your mind is clearing and you're focusing on something, that's altered anyway, but you're describing something that sounds a little bit different. Can you tell us what different types there are?
Yeah, there's the extended remote viewing, which is the altered state, which the military was playing around with before controlled remote viewing came in, the more sequential pen and paper protocol. And this was where somebody can sit in a chair, sit in a couch, on a couch, and relax, close their eyes, and send their mind to wherever they need to go, and then start reporting or writing down what they're perceiving. And of course, the controlled remote viewing is what is called the military method, or the Ingo Swann method, which is the very sequential stages of remote viewing. It's very sequential, very left brain. It occupies the left brain, so the right brain can get the information.
Oh,
that's
I see.
The logic behind it.
Huh.
You've got something called ARV, associative remote viewing. If you've got two outcomes, say silver futures, you know, silver going up, silver going down, keep it simple. There's a way to provide a choice of outcome pictures, target pictures, and remote view the picture that's associated with the outcome that actually happens. It's a little complex, but it's another form of remote viewing.
That sounds really interesting.
Well, do you think that, and this, I'm gonna ask this question and give several examples in it. I think they're all related. They may not be, but I think they are. You think people have, accidental remote viewing experiences? And let me give a little example on this. Let's say if someone is having flashbacks of something, or if someone is, really concentrating on a memory, trying to recall it, or maybe they just get a glimpse of the future, or a glimpse of, they're looking for their car keys and just visualize it somewhere and they see it. I mean, are these things, would you call them remote viewing? I mean, I hope the question is coming through clearly, I'm going at.
Right. It's something that Ingo Swann calls spontaneous remote viewing.
Oh.
Which is another kind of remote viewing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So it is a type
of remote viewing.
Well, is any time that we recall a past event, I mean, is that, if let's say I'm going to recall my previous birthday or something, am I sort of in a way remote viewing that in the past, or is that just a memory? I mean,
I think there's overlap sometimes. Most of it's memory, but I think sometimes if it was a really vivid event and you feel like you're there again, you're reliving the event, perhaps it's a spontaneous remote viewing.
Well, what about dreams? Let's say someone was dreaming. Could that be whatever they're dreaming? Could that be remote view? Like, I guess I'm going to ask this in two ways: are they doing remote viewing possibly while they're dreaming accidentally, or could the person that is dreaming, could their dream be remote viewed upon?
That's two questions. Yeah, I'll answer the first one first. according to Dale Graff, who was one of the managers of the Stargate unit, the military remote viewing unit, he has written several books about remote viewing via dreams. Mm-hmm. And he sets up, I don't know if he still does it, but he would set up challenges for himself. If a new magazine came, he would slip an index card into the magazine before he read it, put that aside, and then task himself with the job of remote viewing what was on that page where he put the card in.
Huh.
And when he woke up in the morning, he'd record his dreams and then open
that's
up.
Cool.
Yeah. And he had quite a bit of success with that.
Well, I've had times when I've been asleep where, and I don't know which you would call this, and you can let me know if that would be a remote viewing type thing or out of body or what it would be or whether we even have a clue. I dreamed, or, well, it didn't feel like a dream. It really felt physically as though I went. I was in a darkened room. It looked like a meeting room or something like that. And there were several men sitting around a table. And it was dark enough to where it looked as if, the lights were subdued. And mm-hmm. they were sitting around talking. And I couldn't hear everything they were saying. But I got a very, very strong sense that they were very, very important people, and they were talking about something that, and I'm not into conspiracies and that kind of thing, so I don't think this came from my fear of, anyway, and I was very physically there. Some of them were smoking, the room was smoky, enough to make me try not to cough while I was there, because I'm very sensitive to smoke.
Yeah.
And I remember, in trying not to, I was so, because I was afraid they would see me because I was there is what I mean, it didn't feel like a dream, I guess is what I'm saying. And I've gone other places, so that wasn't totally surprising to me, but mm-hmm. I mean, in my sleep and all, but it was very interesting because of all the emotions that came at me as, oh my gosh, if they see me, and I could see the backs of this one and the back of that one. And it was, it was just very interesting. And I remember snippets of conversation talking about how we can't ever let anyone know what we've talked about here. This didn't happen. And it was just very clear. And when I woke up, I was coughing from the cigarette smoke. And so my question to you is that kind of, I've had that type of experience before where I came back freezing. And if I were in the snow, and this was so real to me. And like I said, I was smoky smelling. Now,
wow. I think this was a whole complex overlay of several things, because that could have been a remote viewing, just a straightforward remote viewing. It could have been an OBE. It could also have been a lucid dream or even a bilocation.
It was, I remember the feeling of I had to leave before they saw me.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just very intense. I remember telling Robert about it, actually. And yeah. So you think that was, who knows?
I think it was possibly a bilocation because, you know, these are just labels we use to try and explain something very complex that we don't understand fully. So I'm just using the labels, but bilocation is where you actually feel you're at the site and, you know, with all the sounds and smells and tastes, wind blowing in your hair, cigarette smoke. That's what it sounded like.
Well, do you find that one particular, I mean, you discuss different types or different way or methods. Do you find one is more accurate or is it just depending on what you're trying to do?
It depends. I find with ERV, the extended remote viewing, I can get a lot more in-depth information. With CRV, the controlled remote viewing, the military method, I get a wider range of information.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
It varies, yeah, because you have to keep probing for lots of different aspects of information with CRV, the controlled remote viewing. With ERV, you can just go there and proceed and see what's there.
Well, Angela, we're going to have to take a break here for a moment. And when we come right back, we're going to discuss some more about remote viewing and some more questions that we had. So we'll be right back. Want to start a website but don't know how? No problem. The experts at OCS Solutions have you covered. We offer a complete range of internet services, from domain name registration, web hosting, and even our easy-to-use website building tool that allows you to create a website with just a few clicks and be live in minutes. Pick from thousands of templates and samples, upload your own content, or use a mix of both. It's entirely up to you. And don't worry, you won't outgrow OCS. We host websites both small and large. Domain names start at just $8 a year and come loaded with plenty of extras to get you started. Visit OCSDomains.com to learn more or call 1-800-672-8415. That's OCSDomains.com or call 1-800-672-8415.
Reiki is a Japanese relaxation technique that promotes healing and balance. It is a form of energy work that helps unblock areas that are affected by illness, stress, grief, anxiety, or other types of trauma, and it can be given in person or from the Reiki practitioner to the recipient at a distance. It is gentle and soothing and is simple to learn as well. Our bodies have the natural ability to maintain health and heal themselves when energy flows smoothly throughout our energy system, and Reiki works well either by itself or along with traditional or alternative medical treatments to help keep energy channels flowing and the mind and body in balance. I offer Reiki, the Ho Chi, and other types of energy sessions in my home in Florence, Alabama, as well as distance Reiki to any location in the world. I also teach Reiki classes from levels 1 through Karuna Reiki Master, as well as La Ho Chi. To learn more, please visit alabamareiki.com. That's alabamareiki.com.
Welcome back, and we are talking with Dr. Angela Thompson-Smith about remote viewing tonight. And as we were talking before the break, we were talking about how the military had used this, had used remote viewing and done some research on it. And I wanted to ask if you're aware of, I mean, I know this would be top secret, obviously, but if you're aware of whatever came of it and what's going on with it now that you'd be, you know, that you'd be aware of with the government.
Right. I wasn't part of that unit, but I did work at the PAIR lab, the Princeton Engineering Anomalies Research Lab, which was a parallel civilian push to try and understand remote viewing and PK. But the remote viewing unit, the Stargate unit, was in place for about 20 years. And eventually, because it had changed over various managers and contractors and various oversight committees, it was decided that it wasn't, even though it was, from what I've heard, very successful, there was the idea that nobody wanted it anymore, and it was shut down.
Oh, so I guess it probably went off more privately to do what needed to be done.
Right.
I can't imagine it not being around since it was successful.
Yeah, let's face it, it works. So, I mean.
And from what I understand, quite a few of the guys went out and started teaching remote viewing. And I learned from Paul Smith and Linda Gannon, who were two of the ex-military guys.
Oh.
Of course, you've got people now like Ed Danes and a whole bunch of folks, David Morehouse, people who were in the unit who are now out teaching the public. But there's a lot of scuttlebutt about, well, maybe there's still, the government's carrying on some kind of program somewhere.
Well, I cannot imagine being a government who is aware that this is possible and not using it. That, to me,
yeah.
was just silly.
Yeah.
Well, there's a stigma sort of about, these kind of things
in the West.
Right. But I know in the East, they definitely, in Russia and I mean, I've heard Russia, I'm sure other governments that, they seem to accept this stuff more freely. And that's probably to our disadvantage, because
India definitely has a remote viewing program.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And Russia, of course. And Linda Cannon says that he thinks almost every country has some kind of program, government program.
It would only make sense. I mean, it's obviously if it works, then in the reality would be you don't have to send someone to a dangerous place. You don't have to pay them the same hazard pay that you would have to pay someone, in Iraq on the ground.
Well, spy work is dangerous. I mean,
sure.
So, yeah.
Send a remote viewer.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that raises an interesting question. I'll go ahead and ask it now before I forget. Is there any danger to the remote viewer in any of this?
I have not found any danger. I think it's if you go into it with a lot of fear, you're going to encounter fear. If you go in with the idea that you're, if you're doing humanitarian work and you're not used to seeing dead bodies in the ditch, that can cause a lot of grief, a lot of angst, that kind of psychological problem. But remote viewing itself really does not have any dangers attached to it.
Well, that's good. I mean, I just think that's wonderful that someone can sit in the air-conditioned room and be safe and do something that could really help so much. And
yeah.
Are they using it in I mean, I don't know why this popped in my head, but I was thinking even I can see industrial espionage. I mean, there are so many things you can.
Well, yeah, I was going to ask about companies, and I guess it might as well. Like, I mean, do companies use this?
Well, you've got to be very careful when you're doing work for companies because you've got the Industrial Espionage Act and a lot of rules and laws in place about not revealing somebody else's product or stealing somebody else's product. So it could be very difficult, you might step over the line.
Right.
Well, could someone use it to, or someone, could some corporate entity use it to say, well, we're going to launch this product and we're not sure if it's going to be successful. Can you?
Sure.
That wouldn't involve any espionage.
So. No, in fact, I've got one client. He was a major New York financial guy. I've worked with him now for almost 9 years. He's now retired, moved out to Australia. Mm-hmm. But I did a huge amount of work for him on many, many different aspects for his company. And it is applicable to business.
Are there any karmic implications?
That's what I was thinking of the industrial espionage.
I thought you might be. Yeah,
you heard me over there thinking that, didn't you?
Well, not just for finding out. I mean, like if you find out information that benefits yourself, are there any implications to that?
Well, sure. What I say is, it's not so much the information that comes in, it's what you do with it.
Right, yeah. Right.
If you're going to use it for your own benefit, or you're going to use it to hurt or harm somebody else.
Then yeah. That will come back to you.
Big karmic debt there.
Yes. but not good. No.
But if you're using it to help yourself, or like if you're using it to avoid a problem or see if something's going to be successful, then it probably doesn't have, I guess, sounds like what you're saying.
Okay, we're doing a project on gold futures for a client, and it comes back, and gold's going to go soaring in 6 months, you know. Right. I'm not interested in stocks and shares and gold prices. I keep myself neutral. But if I used it for myself, made myself rich by it, I don't know. There could be some karmic comeback on that.
I would think so. I mean, I'm a Reiki master, and I have clients come, and they, you know, sometimes will say that, you know, I'd like more money. And I tell them, well, how about we rephrase that to maybe peace, healing, abundance, something besides I'd like more money, because we don't want to ask for more money. You know, you could get more money by your husband dying and you getting his life insurance. That's probably not what you wanted. So let's be careful what we ask for here.
Yeah. So there's, I have some conditions, personal set conditions that I put in place, because I'm also an ordained shaman. So there are lots of protections and things that are in place. I don't have to put them in place every single time I do a viewing, but they're in place for protections and for guidance. So that I feel is my sort of protection as I go out into doing this work.
Well, wonderful, wonderful.
Well, we touched upon and have been touching upon the time aspect of remote viewing. And do you, you know, I assume from what you're saying and what I've heard about it that it can work both past and future. Can you expand a little bit more on that, especially in regards to the future? You know, how does that work to see something?
Yeah, that's, again, you know, one of those tricky questions in remote viewing, because doing something in the past, you've got some feedback there. You can go back and do some research, get some feedback. Something that's happening right now, you can actually get feedback. Something in the future, you have to wait until it actually happens or doesn't happen to get feedback. And there's an idea that, and I think this is correct, that the nearer the prediction is to the outcome, it's more correct. The further away, the further out, it's less correct.
That makes sense. More variables.
But the future can be remote viewed. I did one viewing back in 1994 of the rings of Saturn. And now the Cassini probe went out and sent back information a year or so ago and confirmed some of the perceptions that I had written about. I wrote the book Remote Perceptions and put some of those predictions in that book, which is out of print, but you can still get it on Amazon. I think that there's something about the quantum mechanics of the future of time that I think when we remote view an outcome, perhaps that outcome is more likely to take place in some weird kind of way.
Oh, because we observe it.
Observed it, yeah.
Yes, I see.
I hadn't thought of that, but that would make sense.
Well, now, what if you had several different remote viewers remote view something that happened in the future, and one of them came back with something? I mean, well, does that, I guess I should maybe clarify this a little more. Do different remote viewers ever get different ideas about what may happen in the future, or different, or see different things in regards to
the same
something? Yeah, the same task or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, it's like everybody, you know, if you have 10 people observe an accident, you're going to come back with 10 different versions of that accident. So what you look for when you get multiple viewers doing viewing of the future is you look for correspondences, for matching information in the information.
So like the least common denominators of all the future viewings and
right.
Yeah. It's interesting.
And also what just popped into my head, I would say again, but that would be a cheap laugh, was the idea of deja vu. you know, I'm sorry, that was a cheap laugh there. But that just made me think of sometimes, you know, when we do see something and it looks very familiar to us, makes,
I know.
You know.
It, yeah.
There. Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't know whether it's part of our brain jumping ahead and viewing what we've done or we're going to do, or that again is one of those mysterious things. Perhaps we still need some mysteries that are not explained.
We need someone to remote view that.
Well, you know, it's as we were saying on the break that, you know, we start out life and it's black and white and this is wrong and this is right and we're told not to do things or touch that or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then the older we get and hopefully the more wisdom we get, we figure out we really don't know that much and that there are so many layers of knowledge and of what even a simple instance. You know, there's so many layers to it. And it used to be that, you know, you couldn't say, well, I can sit in this room and if I really concentrate, and you can too, actually, I can, you know, I can see something somewhere else. And that sounded crazy and it isn't, and it never really was. But it's nice that people, I think, generally their minds are expanding a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
mm-hmm.
wonderful.
Yeah, that's what I tell my students. I teach them remote viewing. And I tell them when they come in, you know, you're going to be doing the impossible this week.
Oh.
if you went out, then you're going to succeed. But if you went out into the street with a pile of envelopes with pictures in and said, okay, pick one of these envelopes and tell me what's in this envelope, they'd look at you and go, you must be crazy. But viewers can go through certain training and protocols, and they can tell you what's in the envelope. And they can model it. They can make a same model of it.
Well, I think it's wonderful that you have made this to where you can train people, and I know that, you know, you, well, time wise, and besides, that's what your program is. But basically, I mean, how do you go about training someone? I don't mean specifics necessarily, but how do you go about training someone to do this?
Well, I've taken the training, the original training, and taken it down to 5 days. And in 5 days, I can teach the 6 stages of controlled remote viewing, which ends up with the viewer modeling their picture target.
And when you say modeling, just are you speaking with drawing the object?
Clay, but drawing and clay modeling.
Oh, okay.
Oh, modeling. Oh. I'm so glad you asked that, Robert.
Yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful. I never thought of modeling it that way. That's an awesome idea.
Yeah.
I guess that's why she's teaching and I'm not.
And I incorporate other things in there, like some telepathy and some ERV, the extended remote view, and the altered state stuff, which we can bring into the later stages. What I like to do is give the viewers a tool belt of methods and techniques so that when they sit down with a target, they can choose how they want to approach it, which method they want to use, and whichever is more appropriate to the target.
Right.
Or to the problem.
And that, do you find that a multidisciplined approach works better? You know, is it more complete when somebody has all these different methods than to just do one method?
I don't know. For me, it is. I like to have a variety of different methods that I can call on. People, Paul Smith, Lynn Buchanan, like to do the controlled remote viewing, and that's their baby, you know, that is mm-hmm. They do it so well that that's what they do. But I prefer to have a variety of methods available.
You know, that makes sense since people learn different ways and see things,
right.
As you said. Some people,
mm-hmm.
you know, see it and some people feel it. And so that's a wonderful way to teach.
We talked about it over the break about David John Oates with his remote, or not remote, with his reverse speech technology and training that he does. We had him on a few episodes ago. He played for us. He had just, I think he was actually in Las Vegas, if I'm not mistaken, in a convention. And he had just finished dealing with some remote viewing work, and he played for us. And listeners, you can go back and hear that in the archives on the David John Oates interview. He played for us the reverse of a remote viewing session. I believe it was the monitor giving that. And have you had a chance to hear that, Angela?
I did. I heard him speak at the IRVA conference, the remote viewing conference this summer. And it was an eye-opener because, for example, I often say to my viewers, write it down because they're telling me they're, because you have to write and say everything during the controlled remote viewing protocol. And they'll be telling me what they're perceiving. I was like, write it down. But what was in reverse speech, it's something like, you did it wrong. So I've had to revise, you know, what I say. And he advised, be very careful. Like, we try not to say, as a monitor, somebody monitoring a session, to say the least possible, just to keep the person in structure, keep them moving along. But to say as least as possible, because you could inadvertently cue the viewer to the target.
Yes.
And I wasn't, you know, I wasn't really aware of that through back reverse speech.
Oh, well, that is that. I remember that, and that was amazing when he played that. And that's really interesting that you heard you did that wrong, or however exactly you said that.
I forget the exact words, but
that's amazing.
I remember one example where he played where I believe he was describing something cylindrical, or I don't remember you know, it had like a lens shape to it, and then the reverse was, it's a satellite dish or something like that, or a dish. I may be really horribly paraphrasing the example, but that's what I remember. And I thought that was interesting. It gave another dimension of what was being viewed, but also you have some information leakage possibly from the monitor.
What it showed to me was that the viewer's subconscious, through the reverse speech of what they were actually saying, the subconscious actually knew the target.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, that is why we wanted to do this show, is that there's so much more to the human mind and the human spirit and the whole human, and well, the rest of the animals too, for that matter. You know, that there's so much we can do that we just don't know we can do, and we have so many more senses than we typically know we have. And so it's just wonderful that you're empowering people to be able to use the rest of their senses.
Yeah, I've had people when they're doing remote viewing and they get to a point where they hit the target. I hate using that word target, you know, the focus picture, the, you know, whatever it is they're focusing on, and they get it and they've written a session summary and then I show them the picture and sometimes they cry.
I can see why, yeah.
And it's an overwhelming feeling of, wow, I did it. And it doesn't take any special knowledge or upfront experience. You know, most people can do that.
I think the wonderful part of it is that, that it's not something that you have to have a Harvard education for, that it's something that comes naturally to us. We just need some guidance to hear ourselves or feel ourselves, basically, to feel what's coming to us. And I just think that's wonderful that, you know, I think it's finally the time in history where it's accepted that there's more to us than just the five senses. Mm-hmm. And those senses are programmed into us, all the rest of the senses, to survive, basically. And it's like being blind or deaf when we're not supposed to, or we don't know how to use the rest of those senses. So I think this is wonderful.
Yeah, it definitely, I definitely agree with that. I was thinking when you're talking about remote viewing, being there or bilocating, if you were remote viewing a target, let's say you and another remote viewer were remote viewing the same target. Mm-hmm. Is it possible to perceive the other remote viewer viewing the target as well?
I've heard that it is possible. I haven't experienced it. Ingo Swann has talked about it, and I know some other viewers have talked about it's almost like if somebody has been to the remote view of the target before, they leave maybe some photons or something behind.
Yes.
You,
mm-hmm.
And those are perceived as information.
Well, now that makes sense. That's the same as going into a room and feeling the echoes of whoever's been there.
Yeah.
That would make sense.
Have you ever remote viewed a a paranormal situation, like say a, and I hate this term, but just for lack of a better word, a haunted house or a place where there's been some kind of activity like that. Have you ever done that?
I haven't done. I've been to haunted houses. I've taken part in some experiences, table tilting, etc. But I haven't remote viewed a haunted house.
So I just wonder if you could, if you could perceive with remote viewing more easily or in a different way the you know the things that were affecting that area, you know, spirits or whatever you want to call them. I just wonder if that is, you know, since you're viewing it in an energetic way, observing it in that way, if someone would be more sensitive to it in that light.
I would imagine they could, yeah.
Or if they would be limited by what they usually can do if they look in a room. I don't know. I mean, if I guess what I mean is if you are sensitive to the energy and you are sensitive to feeling, hearing, seeing things that others might not know that they can, mm-hmm. then I wonder if you could remotely viewing something. That's very interesting. I don't know. Interesting.
Well, it depends, too, on the training you've received. If you train with somebody who says that thing is not, sort of thing is not possible, they dissuade you from doing that type of viewing to a more esoteric target, which I know some of the, you know, some of the viewers, some of the trainers do, then that could hinder picking up some of that kind of information.
It's amazing how many things in history we've been in the human history that we've been told, oh, you can't do that.
Yep.
And it turns out we really can. We just didn't know we could.
Well, right. It sounds like you bring into a remote viewing session either accidentally sounds like you do bring in your own perceptions of what is possible, what isn't possible, and whatnot into one of those sessions as a viewer. I guess objectively you shouldn't, or you.
Can I give you an example?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
I was teaching a woman who'd got up to stage three, and her picture target for that session was a family sitting in a garden. There was a husband and wife and two children and a baby, and the husband was holding the baby. The mother was holding a small child, and there was another child off to the side. And she'd got that there was two, you know, the biologicals, the people. She got that they were children, and she said, there's a baby. So she'd got all this in, and she was sketching, you know, where each was placed. And I said, Once the viewer has given you information, you can give it back. And I said, well, where is the baby? She said, it must be lying on the ground. So I put, okay, AOL, you have to set that aside because that's conjecture. Set it aside, AOL. And she could not perceive the location of the baby. She said, there are three children there. When's the baby? It's parents. She got the garden. She got the house, the ambiance, everything. When she saw the picture, she said, oh, she said, in my culture, men don't hold babies.
So, wow.
Interesting. So
now that's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. As if we needed more validation that this works in the person. I mean, you know, so much of this seems so easy to validate and, you know, unlike a lot of other things, you know, psychics and whatnot, while I definitely believe that occurs, it's tougher to validate some of that stuff. But with remote viewing, you have a scientific method that you can use to validate these things. Mm-hmm. And that really goes to what just happened there. I mean, that's even that's double blind kind of a setup.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And also there's a fair bit of research going on right now. Different people. For example, Melvin Morse and his crew won the Walt Collier Prize at the IRVA conference to carry out some remote viewing research. And there's always something going on in the remote viewing community, people trying to validate different protocols, and different ways of doing remote viewing.
Right. Well, we're about coming into the show, but I had one last question, and I think Ruthann probably does too. I just have to ask this for our listeners. What, you know, you mentioned that you can remote view the future, or that remote viewing the future is definitely possible. What do you see about, you know, right now we're going, the Earth is going through a lot of changes. It's an accelerated time. I don't know if that has to do with the changing of the ages or anything else. But, you know, what do you see, or rather, let me ask it this way. Is there anything significant that you see in the next couple of years, or the next 5 years, we'll say, that would dovetail in with any of the other theories or whatever that are out there about what's going to happen?
Or have you even tried to do that?
Yeah, or have you tried?
I have. In fact, one of my clients tasked me on the 2012 issue, and I did not perceive anything untoward happening, anything more than what's already happening in December 2012. There was not an end of the world. Mm-hmm. I did see an escalation of natural events.
Yes.
The economy continuing to downslide.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'd perceived a few years ago, and I know we're now seeing the riots in England, but I had also perceived riots in Las Vegas around 2012, 2013.
That rather makes sense, actually.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I also wrote about that in Remote Perceptions at the time.
And what was the name of that again, of your book?
Remote Perceptions.
Remote Perception.
Okay. OBEs, Remote Viewing, and Other Normal Abilities.
Well, I know the next book I'm getting.
I can send you a copy if you like.
Oh, I just, that sounds fascinating to me. I have to read that.
But Angela, I want to just give you a moment. You mentioned you were going to Australia, and I know you wanted to give our listeners a little bit of info on that and how they can get in touch with you, if you can let them know that.
Right. Well, they can get in touch with me on my website, which is mindwiseconsulting.com with the usual www. So mindwiseconsulting. And I'm going out for the whole month of October to the Gold Coast in Australia to do some teaching. And you can find information about those classes at mindwiseconsulting.com/Oz. That's O-Z. And there's a whole page of information.
And we'll link to your site on our site as well. So listeners, if you didn't get the address, you can just go to wellroundedcorners.com, and that it'll be on the archive post that we have there.
Great, thank you.
Yeah. That's, I'm afraid, all that we have time for. And I wish we had another 3 hours, but.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. But that's all that we have time for. We've had so much fun. And I think.
I've learned a lot.
Yeah. We both have learned a lot from you. Want to thank you for being here and taking time out of your busy schedule to.
Well, thank you. This has been great.
Yeah, definitely. Had a lot of fun.
And thank you so much for all that you're doing to, as I said, empower people. I think that is just wonderful. So thank you.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, I'd like to remind listeners that they can catch our show, BBS Radio, every other Tuesday, 9 p.m. Central, 7 p.m. Pacific time on BBS Radio Station 1. And until then, you can find us on wellroundedcorners.com, where we post the archives of our past shows. They're available completely free. You can find all the links that we discuss during the show or with our guests. You can also search Well Rounded Corners in iTunes and subscribe to our show from there. It'll automatically download for you to your computer, iPod, or any other device like that. Again, thank you, Angela, for being with us. And
thank you for inviting me. It's been great.
Definitely. And thank you, listeners. We've enjoyed the show. And until next time.
And take care.